Welcome back, everybody, into Bills Chat. I am Josh McCarty. The Bills losing big tonight to the Baltimore Ravens, 35-10. I wanted to get that out of the way right off the bat to let you know this is a post-game show. We took in all of that Sunday night game. And we are here to break it down, recording a little later than usual. With me to go through this fun, as always, is Luca on location. Luca, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, live from Long Island. Boy, that's a horrible way for the night to end, I guess, is the way to start that. It started out with some promise, enjoyable, was at a wedding here today. You know, good fun there. Got to, in deep in Jets territory, enjoy what happened during the 1 o'clock slate. And for it to finish in the way that it did, for the Bills to lose in a blowout fashion for the first time in what feels like forever, as we know, since, I think, what was that Colts game, 2021? Whenever it was.
Yeah, 2021.
Yeah, it's been forever, but that was just, I mean, the Ravens were ready. And I'm not going to say that the Bills weren't ready, but it felt like they were, or it looked like it was. And there were a lot of things that just were not going their way. And it's not like the ball wasn't going their way. It was they themselves were putting themselves in a hole. And I think we'll get to it at some point. But I think what encapsulated the game was, even when things were going their way, they almost couldn't get out of their way to still screw it up. So effectively, it was just.
Yeah, it was a tough game all around. And as the game started, the Bills are driving down and they have the 4th-and-1 conversion that where they're on their own side of the field. And you're thinking, okay, like Bills are going to be aggressive tonight. And then they have a sequence that I just hated. They have an 8-yard run by James Cook on 1st down, 2nd and 2. They run right up the middle to make it 3rd and 2. My one criticism of Joe Brady up until tonight, all season long, has been, I feel like he's left a lot of meat on the bone on these 2nd and short situations where, to me, that's a shot play opportunity. It's 2nd and short. You take a shot deep, you play action, you try to hit a game breaker. And then if you don't get it, you're still right back in that 3rd and 2 situation where you should be able to pick it up. But alas, the Bills, they try to run up the middle. They don't get it. That opportunity is gone. And then a pass goes off of Dalton Kincaid's hands. Would have been a tough catch, but you expect him to make it. And then from there, the Bills punt. And they were right at midfield. And that, to me, it just didn't feel right because you'd already gone for a 4th and 1 in that game. But now it's 4th and 2 and you don't want to go for it. And it did feel like this is one of those games where you want to get up early. You knew the bad weather was going to come in at some point, but also, you know, if you start diving into the matchups, you could kind of foresee that this is going to be a little bit of a different matchup for this Bills defense, where they're strong at corner, they're weak up the middle with some of the injuries. That's where the Ravens try to attack you. Like, you want to get a lead on this team and force them to throw. Well, then right after that, the Derrick Henry 80-yard run. And, you know, I'm not going to go through the rest of the game. But, Luca, to me, I mean, there's so many places to start tonight. The game was terrible. Defense couldn't get off the field. Offense couldn't help the defense. There was a segment of time from like the last little bit of the 2nd quarter and then the beginning of the 3rd quarter where the Bills kind of crawled back into it. They got the scramble play bomb to Shakir, which set up the Ty Johnson touchdown. They get the three and out to start the quarter that sets that up. And then they get another 3-and-out with a Baylen Specter sack. And then they get the ball and they're driving. And then they get to like a 2nd and short and they're only down by 11. And you're thinking, oh man, this is it. Like you score a touchdown here. You're only down by a field goal. And then the trick play happens where Josh Allen lines up at wide receiver. Luca's covering his face. And I totally understand why. It's like reliving this. Curtis Samuel, direct snap to him, pitches it to Josh Allen. Surprise, surprise, like the Bills draw up a trick play where Josh Allen lines up at wide receiver, but he's, get this, folks, still going to throw the ball. Like, whoa, who would have seen that coming? And the Ravens, of course, are all over it. Josh Allen nearly gets killed. He's down on the ground for a while. Looked like his arm got hit. And the ball's loose, fumble. And then from that point on, any momentum the Bills had was dead. The Ravens go on, the snowball builds, and they win 35-10. So I'm gonna ask this in two different ways, Luca. The first way I'm going to ask you is how I normally do, because I think maybe how you answer it will direct my second question. Bills walk off the field 35-10 tonight. We all took it in. Struggles on defense, struggles on offense, struggles with coaching. What's your instant reaction?
Ooh. Even though I know the betting lines were saying the Ravens were the favorites, I still think the term of what I'm going to say applies. And you hear it a lot more in betting. And it's the hungrier dog won on the night. The hungrier dog ran faster. The hungrier dog was more physical. And that was the Ravens. It was clear as day from the jump. And maybe not from the jump. That opening drive for the Bills, it seemed like they were trying to be methodical. They had to earn every piece of the way. They obviously, as you mentioned, had the first fourth down. Then when they get to the fourth and two, it almost felt like McDermott went back to 2020 McDermott, where he's kind of holding on early, don't make the early mistake. And it's like, hey, are you forgetting what we have? What's going on? Like, keep going. Press, push. I don't think anyone would fault him if you went for that fourth and two and it didn't work out. I don't think there's a single soul out there. But anyways, after that moment when Derrick Henry springs that out, it felt like that was it. It really, you're behind the eight ball. It was an absolute uppercut, and the hungrier dog was going to get to it every time. And the entire first half felt that way. And then outside of that blip of momentum when the Bills did have it for a time being, it just completely got them. The Bills walking off that field, to answer your question, I feel like they just have to understand that that outworked, outplayed in every facet of the game. The only thing I can say is Allen got a little wild there for a bit, but overall he still, I don't believe, was the real negative Allen. And I even sent a text to the friends. It was, you know, when that Shakir play happened, Josh, I was like, thank God Allen put on his cape coming out of halftime, because that was clearly needed. We absolutely needed to have if you had any shot in this game. And I think it was there until that trick play happened, where it was just recognized, unfortunately, because of whatever was going on with coaching, whatever was going on, decision-making, all of these things, and then execution in its own right, it was a total failure at that point, where whether it was the game plan they had coming into the week, not understanding what Baltimore was going to do. Maybe, you know, it's not like we were sitting here watching Baltimore tape, Josh, but overall, you know, maybe Baltimore was giving them a lot of things based on their own kind of self-reflection, what they had presented the first 3 weeks, and just completely flipped the script that caught McDermott and the defensive staff off guard. You know, whatever it might be, you know, they just got outclassed on the night. They got outplayed. They got out-physicaled, everything, top to bottom, for 60 minutes. Let's say 55 minutes, just to give them a little bit of a sprinkler when they did have good old momentum on their side. But coming off this field, I think it's going to be a very painful travel home. I think it's going to be a silent travel home, but I believe what you're going to lead into is, I don't know how long this lingers, because it's a professional team. This team's been around. They've had heartbreak before, and it's not like this is postseason heartbreak. This is regular. It's an embarrassing nationally televised game. This is an embarrassment that applies. You got outclassed and outplayed and outcoached, but they're professional. They've been around the block. And I trust that it will kind of be left there and not kind of snowball into something worse before, you know, and become something worse that will let, you know, not, how do I say it? They won't be able to keep up with. And next thing you know, it just gets out of hand.
Yeah. Like we've seen happen to the Dolphins in the last couple of years, where one bad loss snowballs into their season becoming a catastrophe. And I do think that the Bills, even though they are a new look team, they should have that benefit of the doubt. Now, you know, we all knew what was coming after this game, that the Texans are a good team. They, you know, they won again today against Jacksonville, and the Jets, I don't know what to make of them, but it's still like two road games in a row. It's a Monday night game in New York. The schedule gets tough for these next two games. So I think there's a world where the Bills could play a lot better next week and still lose. So, you know, it's going to be tricky to navigate these waters. And it's funny, I haven't had a chance to look. I'm curious before the show ends to get an early line on that Bills-Texans game, now that the Bills have been blown out. I bet it may not even be posted if there's any concern about Josh Allen's injury, but he seemed to be fine. But I'm with you. And, you know, if you're somebody that is trying to figure out why the Bills lost tonight, I mean, you take your pick. It's like an all-you-can-eat buffet. It's the run defense. Let's just get the numbers. Derrick Henry, 24 carries for 199 yards and a touchdown. And Derrick Henry also caught a touchdown pass, which you almost never see. Lamar Jackson had a rushing touchdown, two passing touchdowns. I actually don't even remember the Lamar Jackson rushing touchdown. That's like how much of this game to me was just kind of like a blackout.
That's the touchdown they got after the turnover.
Oh, okay. That's right. And then Justice Hill, who's just a dynamic weapon in the passing game. Really good receiver, had Dorian Williams cooked, 6 for 78 and a touchdown. Okay. So where do we go from here? I think the appetite of the fan base is not necessarily going to want to just like hear us scream for an hour on like, oh, the run defense, you got to have better run fits. Or I think the challenge here is this a sign of this team was never as good as we thought, or was it just a bad game? And I think both things can be true. It's important to keep in mind the Bills, for the vast majority of this season, have been playing without their three best players on defense, all of whom are very important to the middle of that defense. Matt Milano, Taron Johnson, two All-Pros, and Terrell Bernard, a team captain. The good news is Terrell Bernard practiced last week. It looks like he's on the verge of coming back, maybe as early as this week. Taron Johnson also could come back as early as this week. So that's huge for upgrading the defense. Matt Milano, we know it's going to be a longer conversation later into December when he comes back. The other thing I will say, when you lose like this, it's very easy to see like, okay, the blueprint has been made for how to dominate the Bills. The problem with that is the Ravens are a one-of-one team. They have arguably the most freakish athlete to ever play quarterback in the NFL, and arguably the most freakazoid of a running back to ever play in the NFL, both in the same backfield. And they, despite what's going on all around the league, are still a team that likes to ground and pound you and attack you in the middle, throw to running backs, throw to tight ends, and run the ball and do read option. There are very few teams that can duplicate that game plan that the Ravens did tonight. And to a lesser degree, the Bills have already played one of them in the Arizona Cardinals. So I don't think we have to worry about that this is some blueprint now that the Chiefs are going to use or that the Jets are going to use. I mean, even the Texans next week, the Texans are going to look a lot more like the Jaguars and the Dolphins, where their entire goal on offense is to get the ball to their receivers on the boundary because they're excellent. The Ravens are a tough matchup for the Bills. This was a tough game for the Bills. It did not go well, but I think fans, and I made the mistake of being on Twitter way too much during this game. Fans that think that this is some sort of referendum on who the Bills are, it just is not how the league works. This Ravens team has already lost a home game to the Las Vegas Raiders. We've talked about before that September football is a lie. And for everybody that's like, well, this just shows us what's going to happen in January when the Bills play a real team. And I know that's like a concern for a lot of people that the Bills just beat up on the bad teams. The Bills have literally beaten the Chiefs in the regular season the last 3 years. And two of those games have not really even been close. The Bills do very well against the Chiefs, and that has not translated one bit to the playoffs. And I think that's important to keep in mind. This was a September game against a Ravens team who was playing a Bills team that was down their three best players on defense. It got away from the Bills. It happens. You move on. If you're of an advanced enough age, you probably remember the Jim Kelly Bills almost routinely laying a under the lights egg against the Chiefs or the Dolphins, whatever, at least once a year, where it's like they go get their doors blown off by an inferior Chiefs team, not the Chiefs team we're used to now, but like a really inferior Chiefs team, and then they'd be fine and still go on to win the AFC championship. But I do think, Luca, a larger conversation has to be had, though, about like, if we had any dreams that like Matt Milano's an All-Pro, but hey, Baylen Specter is maybe a Pro Bowler, or Dorian Williams is a Pro Bowler. I think the Bills have done a good job to survive this start at 3-1. and have done a good job to look as strong defensively as they have. I think the reality check that has to come back to all of us after tonight's game is they have a lot of backups playing on defense. At one point, Taylor Rapp went out and Cole Bishop was in, and that is going to be tough to overcome. And if they don't get Taron Johnson and Terrell Bernard and now Taylor Rapp back next week, I think expecting this defense to just default to a great defense is a faulty proposition. I choose to applaud the job they've done the first 3 weeks and now accept that this is a real challenge this team faces going forward until they get some of their bodies back.
Yeah, shout out Buddy Dillon. He basically said, I think the SUNY defense is finally getting exposed. And it's like, yeah, I mean, the story of Jamarcus Ingram and Cam Lewis are all great and all, but there's a reason they were both undrafted individuals. There's a reason that they were backups for a time and now they're being thrusted into the starting role. Yes, they've been very, very good, but individuals like that would be starting regularly if they were good. And instead, they're just serviceable backups that now you're starting to stack these things together. And overall, you run into an issue where the defense fit as well. I mean, historically, a McDermott defense isn't great against this style of a team. And effectively, as you have a perfect storm of a situation where I do think a preparation was lacking there, what they were probably going to be seeing. You don't see the success that the Ravens had, three straight touchdowns to start and look like it was very easy for them, unless you just weren't quite seeing what you needed to see in front of you. But then two, you're just being outclassed skill-wise. I mean, Baylen Specter and Dorian Williams have to navigate this entire situation in front of them with Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, and everything you see on the offensive line. And don't, you know, I'm honestly, this is a weird thing to say on a Bills podcast after they just got beat down by the Ravens, but I'm happy that you saw even the Collinsworths of the world recognize Patrick Ricard, because he is a phenomenal Ravens cog for years now. He is a vital piece of that run game blocking that they do. And you were seeing him do a lot of those snap crackback, illegal crackback blocks and everything of that such, where that's what springs things open. I mean, his block is literally the key block in why then Henry was able to just hit that lane without an interior defensive lineman getting in his face. And then he was just off and gone. So it's a thing where, yes, I'm with you on the defensive side. I think, you know, there is a lot where it's just quite simply, they are dealing with a lot going on where this elite personnel that we've been used to, and they've just done a fantastic job up until this game tonight, where it wasn't up to snuff. And that's the reality of it. Hopefully Taylor Rapp's okay, but I will say, Josh, at this point, I was happy to see Cole Bishop go in there just to see what he could do. Just being excited about him. Taylor Rapp, I felt like, had a very poor game up until his injury anyways. But it's not like he was at fault for everything. I think he was a pretty major fault for what happened on that first run. I will say that. But we saw Poyer make those same mistakes too. I will also add, like, you would see, I what's funny to me, Josh, is when that run happened, we talked about it offline. It eventually the game became like the 2020 Titans game that got shifted over to Tuesday, whatever night it was. But anyways, that weird, awkward 2020 game. But then that run itself actually felt like the Damien Harris run against the Patriots. And Poyer was completely missed his run fit. He just ignored it. He crashed down hard and it's like, hey, this wide open lane's right here if you want to take it. And it was just a disaster from the go. So, you know, just overall, just not a readiness for what they were seeing in front of them. And part of that is just Baylen Specter. Dorian Williams is becoming a little bit more of a regular starter, but still, he's fresh in this situation. Taylor Rapp, DeMar Hamlin is still a fresh starter in this situation. Mentioned Cam Lewis. These are all guys. Like, this defense, I think, up to this point is just benefiting from a very elite level play on the defensive line. And tonight, what the Ravens did was basically neutralize that defensive line entirely.
Right.
You're watching them get upfield real quick. And that's not, you can't be doing that on the Ravens when all of a sudden your edges are already past Lamar off the snap. And now your two interior defensive linemen, if you have two, they're present, which the Bills primarily do, are kind of just need to focus on Lamar Jackson, Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, and then potentially something else going on as an additional blocker in that area as well. It's a recipe for disaster. So it's just the defense, I don't think, deserves a lot of blame in the sense of expectations to reality for this game, because I think this was just a reality call to everyone else in understanding what the Bills ultimately have on defense and just how above expectation they've actually been performing up until this point. And kind of in correlation with that, I mean, if you go back to our season preview, I believe both you and I know myself for a fact, but I'm pretty sure we were in aligned with this. We both projected them to lose this game. And that was with us under the impression of Taron Johnson would be there. Matt Milano would be, thought he would be at the time. You know, this would have been at a healthy unit. We took this as a loss because it's a bad matchup for what McDermott has loved to do and what this defense excels at. As you mentioned it perfectly, it's like, I think the strength of our defensive line is that perimeter corner position. And it's like, hey, if there's one position that truly doesn't matter out there, really, when you're playing the Ravens, it's the perimeter corner play. So they do not care about your Christian Benford and Rasul Douglases. And then when they're not even having their best games, not that I think they were at fault for really anything anyways, but it's like as a collective unit, it just wasn't working. It's not going to happen. It's just not your day, right? And it's just need to kind of live. This might be a throw out the tape for the defense kind of deal, Josh, as you also mentioned, 1-1 kind of offense you're facing. They shouldn't really be facing anything like this. Hopefully for the near future, you know, they would be in the playoffs, and that's when you reassess this tape, because until then you're not seeing Lamar, you're not seeing Derrick Henry, and you're not seeing this real like unique run scheme option offense that they just absolutely got destroyed by.
Let's talk about Sean McDermott. I feel like tonight was a rough night for him for a lot of reasons, but I think a lot of his fourth down decision-making is coming under scrutiny. We talked about the first drive. I did not like the punt in that scenario, primarily because it goes against the tone he already set on the drive by going for a 4th-and-1. But then several drives into the game, we are now 3 drives in, and your offense has mustered 3 points, and you're now punting again on 4th-and-short when your defense has given no resistance to the Ravens, 3 drives, 3 touchdowns. I just felt like Sean McDermott, while maybe the book is telling you like, hey, we're on our side of the field and we don't want to give them a short field, I think you have to read what's happening in front of you right now. And the fact that your defense is putting up 0 resistance and your path to winning this game is really to lean on your offense. I think it was a disappointing night for McDermott in that regard, Luca. I don't want to pretend like Sean McDermott is an overly conservative coach, because I think the data does show otherwise. But at least tonight, I feel like he came up short.
It felt like we saw 2020 McDermott. I mentioned it earlier. It was out of character feeling, though. It made me question kind of what was going on or what the game plan was, because as you even said, that first drive was really a head scratcher. You already showed that you're setting the tone. You're deeper in your zone, or your side of the field, your zone. Your side of the field, and you go for it on a 4th-and-1. Okay, yes, it's an extra yard at midfield, but at the same time, Josh Allen gets 2.5 yards just by laying down. It feels like at times there was clearly something going on that was working on the left side of the offensive line matchup wise. I will say that when they're doing their sneak, when they did their sneak twice or 3 times tonight, they went to the left, but on top of it, they were getting something there. But it's not saying that you're doing that on 4th-and-2. But we've seen other things out of this offense already. You know, we've seen these kind of designed 4th-and-needed plays that have worked already, that you would like to think that they could reach into that bag and use one of those in that moment to make sure they can keep the foot on the gas and continue to set that tone. Like, we are here to kind of jump out early and make sure that the Ravens, for instance, can't feel as comfortable to run the ball like you know and expect them to be. And unfortunately, McDermott got a little bit conservative out of character, because I'm with you on that. That is not, I don't think that's not his modus operandi anymore. I mean, that's something we haven't really thought about McDermott since 2020, where now it just felt strange And I will say this, when the vibes get that kind of feeling, Josh, that's when I'm uncomfortable as a spectator. If I'm questioning the feeling I have about what the hell my coach is deciding on, and then, you know, you're questioning play calling, not because necessarily you would think you have a better idea, but it just feels out of character. It feels different than what we've been watching previously. That makes me uncomfortable because it, you know, you're unsure if what's going on is anything that needs to be different, because what you've seen so far has been successful. And ultimately, we just talked about with the defense, you would think, Josh, and this is just my opinion, but I think it's a opinion of most. If you understand your defense is a little banged up and you're unsure what they're going to ultimately be able to do against a Ravens offense that I would think McDermott was probably a little nervous about, why not just take those risks? Because you know you need to maintain with that and allow your offense to stay on the field as much as possible and obtain as many points as possible. Why would you all of a sudden get in your shell and think that you can just maintain from there? I just, a lot of question marks with McDermott's decision-making. And I think there's something to be said where setting the tone in the bad way that McDermott did, that trickle-down effect with his staff, I think could be said that it was there a little bit, where the indecision was very apparent in my eyes with other decisions being made by other staff members.
Well, the other staff member, let's talk about him, Joe Brady. Let's talk about the trick play. I've been watching it now, like on repeat on the screen over here, trying to figure out what went wrong besides the call. Like the call, we all understand it doesn't make sense, but the way the play is set up, Samuel is pitching it to Josh Allen, who is looping back around, and it looks like Allen is going to wind up back to where he would be if he just did like a 7-step drop, and he's going to throw it to whoever he's going downfield. But what happens is Kyle Vannoy at the snap of the ball gets right by Deion Dawkins. And as soon as Samuel is running toward Allen to pitch it to him, Vannoy is in his face. I think when I first watched it, I thought, oh man, Samuel's got to eat that ball, because for one, that's the franchise quarterback right there. Like, you don't want to put him in harm's way. You're Curtis Samuel. You've been hit before. Just go down, take a loss, like whatever. But as I've watched it over and over again, I'm actually more impressed with how Samuel improvised. He pitched it to Josh Allen while kind of blocking Kyle Vannoy. The problem, I think, is what Josh Allen did. If Josh Allen carries out the play as it's designed, I think the block that Samuel threw for him would have propelled him to be open as he looped back around. Now, on the other side of the field, Kyle Hamilton, who is excellent, is reading this like a book, and he is charging toward Josh Allen's spot. What would have happened is, I think Josh Allen would have had enough time to stop and throw if somebody's wide open, or at least throw it away and get the play like to third down. What Josh Allen does is he reads the same thing that Samuel does, only Josh Allen thinks, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to loop around, and now I'm going to go to the front side of the play. And that's where, unfortunately, Samuel blocks Kyle Vannoy right into where Josh Allen's going, which gives him kind of like a springboard boost to get right behind Josh Allen and hit the arm right as he throws it. It is a fantastic play by Kyle Vannoy. I mean, just a fantastic play. And unfortunately, a bad play by Josh Allen. He was put in a bad position by the offensive coordinator. But Luca, I hate being hindsight Mr. Analysis guy, because if that trick play works and Josh Allen, I have no idea who he's looking for, throws a touchdown pass to Keon Coleman, we're all going nuts. But I will first guess this. Josh Allen lining up at receiver, who's ultimately going to throw the ball, is not fooling anybody. If you have a Taysom Hill on your team that at least gives the illusion of somebody else could throw it, maybe I can see it. But in that scenario, if you're going to run a trick play with Josh Allen at receiver, I need Keon Coleman, Curtis Samuel, somebody else to be the one throwing the ball, and Josh Allen being the biggest decoy in the history of decoys. The fact that the ball wound up back to him to throw it isn't fooling anybody. And I hated that. And I'm not the biggest believer in momentum, but I think watching that game, feeling the way that game felt, knowing the history of the Ravens this season, how they've let second half leads slip away, you're in that moment, you're driving on them. And when you give them that opportunity to get out of jail free card to stop your offense, that's what ended up getting this game back to the blowout. I just thought it was a bad call by Joe Brady, a bad execution by the team, particularly Josh Allen. But my one hope for this, Luca, is it's September. Joe Brady is still a relatively young play caller in this sport. We've all been throwing roses at him so far. Maybe this is a moment he can learn from. Maybe this is a situation where he was feeling himself. He got into his bag and he's like, I know what we need right now. Let's get him. And when in reality, it was like, hey, Joe, like things are cooking right now. Let's not get in the way and overcook the play. And that's my one positive on that is maybe it can be a learning experience, but an awful moment for Joe Brady.
That is the most optimistic spin to that decision and everything possible. And let me just slam it back. A trick play should be a heat check. And if you're unfamiliar with the term heat check, it's kind of more of a basketball term. So one thing, I'm just honestly shocked that I'm using a basketball term, but a heat check, you just start ripping shots because you're just draining everything that you could possibly throw up there. So that's if everything's operating on all cylinders, things are going really well, and you're like, this is what we call the highlight reel play, heat check. Let's see what we got. Let's see what we can do. Things are working so well. That would have been something if we saw that last week, Monday night against Jacksonville, I'd have been like, yeah, makes total sense. I get it. Everything's working right now. Why not have a little fun? Get it. When you, I do believe in momentum. I'm a big proponent on feelings. I think emotion, of course, plays into it. And I think momentum and emotion are very correlated in that, right? So I believe the players can feel it. I think the Ravens defense could feel it. And when you do something like a trick play, that is ultimately putting momentum on a knife's edge. And it's either going to work beautifully or horribly. And, you know, it's funny when I think about a trick play, I think more about fake punts, but overall, there's a quote in a 30 for 30 Catholics versus Convicts when Dave Winstead or someone else mentions how, or I think maybe it was even Lou Holtz or the players or whatever, when Miami in that game does a fake punt, it's someone finally flinching. That to me is what that is. You're flinching, and the first team to flinches generally loses. If you blink, you flinch, you lose. And you can't be doing that when you finally have a grasp on the game. Things are going your way. And as we talked about, and everyone understands, you are within striking distance here as you are driving down the field. Why in God's earth are you deciding the moment in time to show a little flair? Secondly, if we're breaking down the play itself, Josh, I don't know if I entirely, I will say it's impressive that Samuel got the ball off to get to Allen. I will say that because Van Noy absolutely does blow it up as quickly as possible. I think Allen stops because the ball is very behind him. So Allen at that point in time, when he sees the ball in air, is fully concentrated on just getting that thing into his hands. Allen at that moment, this is where I think he's at fault. Just get down. It's dead. If you are intended to then go back that other direction to then find whatever it is, which by the way, Marlon Humphrey is sitting in the basket waiting for that to happen. So it wasn't going to happen anyways. And Kyle Hamilton, I believe, was over there, as you mentioned as well. It's like when that moment happens, just get down. Play's dead. Live to fight another day. And you would think the way Allen's been going this whole year, I would almost imagine. And I don't know if I even ultimately thought that in live time, but as soon as it was over, one, the question of, is Allen really hurt? Because holy shit, they just cut to him face into the ground, hunched over. It looked like it, as you mentioned offline, it looked similar to the Jets injury from a couple of years ago to his arm, potentially, because it's, you know, him cocking back to throw it. And all of a sudden, someone just got to his arm. Luckily, on replay, you see it's kind of more just really hitting the ball, barely touching him, and he turned out to be okay. But effectively, after that point, when I saw the replay, when you watch it again, you're like, Allen, just get down. It looks dead. Just get down. I'm not saying that Allen's at fault for this, because ultimately I think fault does lie in the play call, because, you know, just not to sound like a broken record, you know, in your regard, what the hell are you doing trying to fool anyone with Josh Allen in motion? If you're lining up Josh Allen out wide, it should be like a wildcat situation where he doesn't move. Do the Jay Cutler, man. I don't care. Just stand there with your beer gut hanging out like it doesn't matter. I don't care. you should not be affected. But then also I saw you even retweeted a buddy of mine, Joel's tweet, where it's like, when you have Josh Allen at quarterback, what the hell are you even running Wildcat for anyways?
He is Del Reed just retweeted that too, by the way. Like that's blowing up.
It's like Josh Allen is the ultimate Wildcat quarterback. Why? Because he can run a Wildcat and also run an elite offense in the NFL. That is what he is. We know it. Everyone knows it. So who you, as you said, who are you fooling? Who are you tricking? What's going on? And it just, that was, Josh, I'll be honest, I almost messaged you to say, do you want to start recording in 10, 15 minutes? Because I was confident as hell that the game was over at that point in time. When that happened, it was done. When I talk about momentum, and I'm a believer in it, it was drained and gone. That thing was flowing out of that stadium for the Ravens, done and dusted. There was no hope, and it didn't surprise me one bit that the Ravens went right back into this groove on offense. They drove right down the field. Lamar scores. He gives a look at the camera, and deservingly so. Lamar understood it as well. I think that was ultimately what it was, is they understood that basically they got handed the game back on a silver platter. Thank you so much. In a big game in their eyes, and in everyone's eyes, it is a big game regardless. Like we talk about, yes, it's a regular season game, and it's just one of 17, but it's a big one regardless. And the Ravens got it. And that was the moment it was signed, sealed, and delivered for them, courtesy of Joe Brady. And would you like it to be a learning experience? Of course. I would be like, hey, Joe Brady, every one of those trick plays you possibly have in your binder or in your tablet, burn it, delete it. I don't care. I never want to see a trick play the rest of this year unless you are, again, like I mentioned before, heat checking it. And it could quite literally not skew the game in any sort of manner. Like that needs to be the time you do it. I don't want to see it ever again. This is not a movie. Like we talked about a fake punt going to DeMar Hamlin in the playoffs. This is not a movie. This is real life. This there, you know, you're one of 11. You are the coach. You are a reflection of your team when you make that decision. And that is just not right now. Again, I'm not saying the fake punt is Joe Brady. I just want to back. That's a McDermott call, of course, but effectively when you make that decision, you are putting everything on a knife's edge. And when you screw up, you absolutely hand everything over to the other side, and it's done and over. And that was the moment this game ended, even though there was still plenty of time on the clock.
Luca, let's go to our game ball game check segment here a little sooner than usual, because I want to talk big picture afterwards. So the way this segment works, game ball goes to the Bills player who is our MVP for tonight's game. That'll be interesting. Game check is the player who should hand in their game check. And I think we have some options tonight, Luca. Who gets your game ball in the Bills' performance in the 35-10 loss to the Baltimore Ravens?
You know what? I kind of thought about this before we started recording, and I wasn't quite sure how I'd go about this. Because I think, yes, it was an awful game, but I think there is kind of a couple candidates for game ball. Where I'm going to go with this is a little bit off the beaten path, because I think this game, as many negatives as there are, you need to try to dig a little bit deeper for that positive, and that's where we need to go for this. And the first play this individual makes was a excruciatingly painful play that didn't happen. And then what was awesome was the comeback, the bounce back, the resiliency, and the person to help get that momentum back, where then effectively he was no part of the reason that it went away. And I'm going to give my game ball to Keon Coleman. The reason I'm doing that is because he drops that ball in a game where everything's going against the Bills. And one, Allen could have completely just gone away from him at that point, because you got to catch that damn. It's both your hands. And as Collinsworth said perfectly, you can't throw a ball any better than that. It was absolutely perfection. But Allen comes back to him, tries to hit him on timing, you know, back shoulders, which, again, I can't believe I'm crediting Collinsworth this much. He said it right. It's a beautiful pass to watch when it works. And back-to-back times, that ball got thrown to Keon. He was ready for it. He absolutely executed it perfectly, came down with it, and those were big catches to help get that momentum back, get the ball and the chains moving. And in a game where it's really hard to find the ultimate kind of game ball candidates, I think there's something in that little part of this that deserves it for me. So I'm going to give my game ball to Keon Coleman.
The regular season is a process, and you know, you get a win, you get a loss, you're a 3-1 football team, but there's points in the regular season where, you know, everything's always changing. And I do think tonight was probably a positive for the Josh Allen, Keon Coleman connection, because it was chaotic out there. Things were not going well. And three different times Josh Allen needed a play, he threw it up to Keon Coleman. The first time, you mentioned, didn't come down with it. Two times after that, Keon Coleman rewards Josh Allen. And that those become trust balls. And if Keon Coleman can continue to reward him in that way, that's going to go a long way to making him a bigger focal point of the offense. And I noticed after the shorter completion to him over the middle, which I think set up a third down, he rotated out of the game. And you could tell he was frustrated. He's like, no, leave me in the game. I'm cooking. So I like that for him. Like he's got like a dog mentality. I really enjoy his personality. And I just am excited to see him continue to get better. My game ball, it came down to two players for me. One was Connor McGovern, just because whatever was going on with, you know, the concussion and not coming back into the game, then coming back into the game, I wanted to say, hey, thanks for coming back into the game. But I'm just going to be honest. Like, as I was watching this game, there was one player who seemed to pop more good than bad, and it was Dorian Williams. And I know he was the guy that was charged with the touchdown pass to Justice Hill. That any scenario where Dorian Williams is expected to cover Justice Hill one-on-one on a wheel route is a fail from the beginning. But I thought he was the Bills' most aggressive tackler tonight. I thought he brought physicality at the point of attack when a lot of guys, let's be honest, didn't look all that interested in having contact with Derrick Henry. So on a night when the majority of the defense left a lot to be desired, I thought Dorian Williams, you know, played pretty well for himself in a game where a guy that's better against the run than the pass, you'd expect him to step up. And I thought he did for the most part. Now I might, you know, eat my words. If I go back and watch the all 22 and see that he was the one at fault for the initial Henry run, somebody had to be at fault that led to Taylor Rapp having to take on the fullback and then tackle Derrick Henry. That could not have been the game plan. But here we are. Luca, this should give us some more options. Who gets the game check for you in the Bills-Ravens loss?
I will say Taylor Rapp was an early candidate for me. And then because he got hurt, I'm not gonna double down on that. That would be pretty rude. It has to be Joe Brady in my eyes. It has to be. This is a failure at preparation and decision-making. That is what I am a firm believer that in the NFL, you do not get blown out by 20 plus points if the coaching staff and everyone that's paid to do so in game planning puts together a great game plan. And that's the bottom line. Now, McDermott, of course, is the biggest umbrella of them all in that. But I think Joe Brady, the crown jewel for this argument is that trick play. But I believe that entire first half, Josh, it really left me questioning a lot about what he was deciding to do on offense, what the game plan was. I know I went on Twitter a lot more than I usually do during the game. I didn't go at anyone on Twitter, I will say. I'm proud of myself for that one. But overall, what I did see was a lot of comments about questioning the lack of pre-snap motion and all of this. And it's something that what I found interesting was I didn't in the moment find myself thinking that, but then as soon as I saw those comments and I looked back and I'm thinking about it, I was like, yeah, a couple times. It was almost like, you know what was weird, Josh, is the pre-snap motion this time was like a lazy pre-snap. We're going to put Ty Johnson outside tackle in the backfield, and then it's like, hey, let's see what we get pre-snap and just move him back into the backfield, you know, inside the tackles. It's like, I mean, what are you really trying to read with that? What's the advantage? What are we trying to do here? You didn't see your normal kind of pre-snap typical motion that would give you a little bit more of information to diagnose what you see in front of you from a Josh Allen perspective. So Joe Brady left me wanting a lot more tonight. And then he tried to do something like the biggest play of the game is Josh Allen being superhuman. That is quite simply the biggest play for the Bills. Let me put that asterisk on there, is Josh Allen being superhuman. Everything else, it just felt difficult. It felt methodical in a negative space. There was none of that kind of everything to up until this game, Josh, felt comfortable, felt, I don't want to say easy, but it felt routine in a positive way. It felt like they knew what they needed to do. The play calls made sense. It made sense to the game script, we'll call it. tonight was the polar opposite. And I put that solely on the shoulders of Joe Brady. Game check, Joe. That was brutal to watch.
It's hard to argue with that. The offense was out of sync. They had 3 points in the first half, and then the trick play killed any momentum that the team managed to get. I said on the halftime show when I was live that I know it seems bleak right now. It's 21-3, but the history of these two teams tells me that there will be a point in this second half where it's like, I don't know, can they? And there was. The point was there, and then Joe Brady snatched it away. I'm with you 100%. There's a lot to choose from here. You know, maybe we need to even have a Tyler Bass conversation after this. I'm not even going to give him the game check, but I feel like it's probably time to have a Tyler Bass conversation. You know, the Dalton Kincaid drop early did not help things, but Kincaid went, you know, 5 for 47. And, you know, he was one of the bigger weapons in the game. Taylor Rapp, I have like this part of me that just can't give a game check to somebody who got hurt. But there's also a part of me that, much like you either said this to me off air or you said it on the show, sorry, but maybe the Taylor Rapp injury could be a good thing for this defense. I firmly believe that the Bills' best safety is probably Mike Edwards. And I think that the Bills' highest ceiling safety is Cole Bishop. And I believe that safety is a problem for this team right now. So anything that gets one of those two guys on the field in place of one of the two guys on the field right now is a plus in my mind. So if it takes an injury to make that happen, then so be it. For the sake of the team, I don't want to see any human being get hurt. But overall, I'm going to go McDermott. I feel like there's too many. He's the way you can kind of encapsulate the whole thing. You want to blame Joe Brady? That's McDermott. You want to blame Bobby Babich? That's McDermott. The punting on fourth and short when your offense couldn't make any stops, that's McDermott. You know, Joe Brady calls in a trick play, and the last line of defense between that going to Josh Allen's ear, that's McDermott. McDermott could be like, are you kidding me? We're going to call that right now. So all in all, I'm going to go McDermott. But you know, I think there's a lot of names you could choose from here. But I just feel like that one is the one. I saw a lot of criticism for the defensive line. And I will say this, they lost their battle tonight for sure. But I think it's important to remember the bind that Lamar Jackson puts you in as a defensive lineman. You can't just freely rush the passer. And that is where the Bills defensive line was going to have the advantage in pass rush situations, because if you go too far upfield, like Lucas said, that's just running room for days for Lamar Jackson. And it really does put you in a situation where you have to conservatively rush while staying in your lane. And it just makes you uncomfortable. I don't think this is indicative of the Bills having some sort of bad defensive line. I know takes out there on Twitter would say otherwise. Luca, what should the Bills do with Tyler Bass? He missed another kick tonight, 48 yards. He did make a 50 yarder, but you know, if you watch the league, these kickers, they're making like 55, 60 yarders like it's nothing, to the point where the Broncos and Jets, Will Lutz and then Greg the Leg, both missed 50 plus yarders at the end of the game in horrendous conditions. And it was almost stunning when they both missed. Like you see kickers now just drilling 55, 60 yard field goals like it's nothing. And for the Bills, who have one of the highest paid kickers in the sport, it still feels like it's a dice roll when he lines up for a 48 yarder. Again, he missed tonight. He's not the reason they lost, not even close. But there are going to be closer games down the stretch. He is probably going to cost them more points down the stretch. Is there a move to be made? Is bringing in someone off the street really going to solve anything? How much patience do you have left with Tyler Bass?
Very little. As you pointed out, around the league, you are watching these kickers hit field goals at such a high rate. I mean, it's funny. Justin Tucker is starting to miss field goals, which is very odd for him. He's historically one of the best kickers of all time, and he's starting to miss kicks. And you don't necessarily hear Ravens fans saying that they need to get rid of him, but it's not like the idea of it. Time comes for everyone eventually. And for whatever reason, I'd love to know what happened to Tyler Bass. I remember sitting recording, Josh, with you, when you went to that Thanksgiving game in Detroit and you talked about Tyler Bass being money and how comfortable you were. And I know you referenced it since then as well. And something has happened all of a sudden where that is, he couldn't be further away from that form, from the way he felt at that time and whatever was going on. I mean, when he lined up for that 50 yarder, I was watching with my father-in-law and my wife, and I was nervous. I was very nervous, and it was dead nuts right down the middle. And I out loud just said, "Wow, I'm surprised," because I genuinely did not have a great feeling about it. Fast forward, we get later on to the game where you're like, it's a 3-score game, trying to cut it to 2-score. Although again, you're not feeling great here. And it just, it never had a chance. And I just, there's gotta be something else up there. And it's, I know it's tough. And again, it wasn't far off when he was in form, but there's a time when you need to just cut bait. And coming from a team that already has kind of done that, when you didn't want to get too far down the rabbit hole with your, you know, your more veteran guys, and while they're declining, you cut bait with all of them. While you're watching Tyler Bass, even though he's not exactly what I call an older player, while you're watching him regress and decline in performance, you need to evaluate what's out there now. You have to do it. It would be almost irresponsible if you don't, because as you just said, these misses are eventually going to start costing games. And you cannot let that, you cannot let Mike Vanderjagt happen to Josh Allen. You need to figure that one out, and you need to do it fast.
You could make the argument it happened last year. Mike Vanderjagt missed a field goal against the Steelers that would have put the game in overtime the year before Peyton won the Super Bowl, and it wasn't even close. Now, I mean, a lot of us watching that game felt like whether or not he makes a field goal or not, Mahomes is going to go down, but you at least give yourself the opportunity to make a stop, AJ Klein notwithstanding. I want to get some cleanup on some stuff going on with the Bills after the game. Khalil Shakir left the locker room in a walking boot. That'll be something to monitor as the week goes on. I don't think that should be necessarily seen as a sign that he's not going to be available for next week's game. The Bills tend to be very cautious with this stuff. They are getting ready to board a plane. So, I mean, it makes sense that, I mean, I suffer from plantar fasciitis when I run, and I'll wear a walking boot. So, you know, the Bills are going to err on the side of caution. Taylor Rapp was ruled out with a concussion. I would say that history tells you he's probably not going to be up for this next week's game. And then Connor McGovern was able to come back into the game. Otherwise, Josh Allen, it sounds like, was more of like a back situation where it like knocked the wind out of him on that play, not the arm, which, you know, sigh of relief there. So the big one this week, Luca, will be Khalil Shakir as the Bills get ready for the Houston Texans, who have some injuries of their own. They played today without Tank Dell, and they played today without Joe Mixon. We'll see if those guys get back in time for the tilt next week against the Buffalo Bills. For the folks covering the press conference, I thought this was interesting. Josh Allen was said to have been very calm, and I watched one of his answers, and I didn't get to hear it because I was listening to you, but I could just see his face. It was like he was just talking. That's not nothing to me. We've seen Josh Allen after devastating regular season losses where he looks like his favorite pet just died. Like he just looks so sad and so like it gets to him. And on one hand, you're like, good, like players should be just as mad as I am. But on the other hand, you're like, dude, like you're the starting quarterback. Like they're going to feed off of you. And I know like maybe that's going to activate game face Josh Allen, but there's something I want to feel optimistic about, Luca, that Josh Allen's just up there like, hey, we didn't have our best ball tonight. Like, I'm not saying it doesn't matter to him. I'm just saying he was very matter of fact, and he doesn't have the boo-boo face going on. That makes me feel good. Like maybe he's turned a corner on this maturity path he's on as he's becoming a veteran quarterback.
I think I'm with you. I share a mind, and I'm actually very happy. And I think it's not nothing, and I'm happy to hear this because I think this is just an example of him being able to get through, you know, the quote unquote 12 stages of grief much quicker. That's good. You don't want to see Josh Allen, as we've seen before, sitting behind a mic, staring blankly across the room, answering questions without his head or eyes moving at all, it seems like, and stuff like that. You know, you want to see him still just kind of process it for what it is. When you see you know, to bring up a Mahomes, or you've seen in the past with a Manning, a Brady or whatever. It's like those individuals, when they lost, they recognize the loss. It's not like they're happy about it, but you can already kind of see the gears turning in their head where they're just, it is what it is. We're moving on. There is, you know, a day after today. Again, the playoff loss is a little different here. We're talking about week four in the regular season. Not to say it's not a big game, as we mentioned earlier, but there is life after this week. We have the, you know, we as in the Bills have the Texans next week. And Josh Allen, clearly it seems like, unlike previous Josh Allen, is recognizing this wasn't their best effort. I saw some of the stuff that you're even talking about where he even mentions that you're hearing kind of the same message, but it's coming across in a different light emotionally. And you can see a little bit of that, if we want to call it maturity, if we want to call it whatever else. It's just he's getting through it, processing it in a what feels like a much healthier way that come tomorrow, come Tuesday, he's already going to be mentally prepared to move on to the Texans. And that's only better. You're not losing a day over it because, as I mentioned, as I started here, he's processing slowly through the 12 stages of grief. He's already getting through it. He recognizes the loss. And maybe there's something to be said, Josh. A lot of these losses have been those closer style. So he's been in it for the entirety of 60 minutes. He was able to sit on the bench for the last 7+ minutes of game time. You know, Trubisky went in there, had a couple series of his own, and Allen was told to sit it, you know, we got you next week and so on and so forth. So maybe that is going to help with this. And overall, that's why he is in that kind of state. Just another kind of caveat on that. But overall, it is something that you would like to see a little bit more of now. You don't want to see those things weigh so heavily on him where he feels like all of a sudden that flip switches, Josh, and next week he can only be Superman. He can't be anything else. He has to be, you know, he needs to continue to be what we've seen these previous 3 weeks, excuse me, and continue down that road so that everything's okay. And he can continue to be very successful running this offense and getting this team wins like he needs to be.
I am now in the process, Luca, of looking up the Bills Texans line, unless you already have it. I'm pulling it up on FanDuel.
I already looked it up on DraftKings. It was Bills favored by one.
Ooh, interesting.
I will say, although I don't know when the money was reflected based on DraftKings, but the DraftKings also showed that like 70% of bets are on Bills minus one. But again, that could have already been sitting there previous to the end result. I'm not entirely sure. I don't think that would be the case because, like you even mentioned earlier in the episode, they normally wait for games to finish before posting those lines, but who knows?
Bills mine. Oh, see, now FanDuel has it as Bills plus 1.5. So who knows? A lot to sort out this week. But as we navigate into this upcoming big game against the Texans, another team we project will be in the playoffs, another team that if the Bills finish with the same record as you would like to have that win over them in the regular season to get home field. I just want to say something to folks that are feeling particularly down after this game. And I certainly interacted with a lot of them on Twitter tonight. I will tell you, don't get wrapped up in First Take, Nick Wright, all this stuff that I know we all really enjoyed the last couple weeks when everybody was talking about the Bills and look how smart they were to get rid of Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis. Look how good their offense looks. Oh my God, Sean McDermott's a defensive genius. He's doing this with backups, and look how they shut down the Dolphins, and look how they shut down the Jaguars. Are the Bills the best team in the NFL? And Stephen A. Smith had a number one on their A-list. And don't get wrapped up in the fact that all of that is gone for a week. It truly does not matter. It didn't matter last week. It didn't matter the week before. It doesn't matter this week. It's conversation to fill airspace. Understand that the football regular season is a marathon, especially now there's a 17-week season. The ultimate goal for all of these teams is to be playing their best ball and understand their team identity by the time the playoffs roll around. The Bills are not in position to play their best ball right now because three of their best players are not on the field, and all three of those players for now are projected to be back in playoff time. So for the Bills, just like many teams right now where you're just seeing the craziest upsets left and right, I think I saw a stat today where the biggest favorite each week, the first 4 weeks of the season has lost. And that was the Jets today. It's September football. Nobody knows anything. Just make sure that you win more than you lose so that when your team finally figures out who they are, you're not playing from behind like the Bills were doing last year where they had to play perfect the rest of the season just to get back into the playoff hunt. So for the fans out there, for people that are listening, be mad about what happened tonight. That's okay. Be disappointed. Be sad. Be whatever you want to be. I felt all that. I hated watching this game. It was disappointing, and you hate to see your team go through that. But don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It was one game. I fully expect this team to rebound next week against the Texans. As in, I don't expect this team to go out and lose by 30 points to the Texans. Do I think the Bills are going to go beat the Texans next week? I'm not ready to predict that either way right now. I have to do some more work on that matchup. I have not been overly impressed with that team. I do like the fact that where their strengths are on offense or where I think the Bills' strengths are on defense, and we'll see what the Bills can do offensively. The Shakir thing is definitely worth monitoring. But for those of you out there that are feeling like everything we believed the first 3 weeks was a lie and these are the real Buffalo Bills, take a deep breath. The regular season is a long, long process. They're a 3-1 football team, and there are a lot of teams out there, including the one that beat the Bills tonight, that would much rather be 3-1 than whatever their record is. Luca, any final thoughts out of you as we try to flush this game?
On topic of flush, I've never heard throw the baby out with the bathwater, so that's a fascinating term that or saying that I'm going to have to deposit in the bank of when to rip that one out. Said though, overall, it is week four. It is September football. We're gonna be sitting here as fans about this game a little bit by Tuesday and forgetting it entirely by Friday. And next thing you know, we're all just looking at the Texans. And what I cannot wait for at this point, Josh, is to see how all of these different voices that are going to probably take shots or do whatever they're going to do. Maybe we will see that banner that Nick Wright didn't want to rip out earlier this week. We're going to see that come out now as a troll. You know, what is going to happen though when focus shifts? And of course, the narrative of all narratives that will be there for the Bills-Texans game is Allen versus Diggs. What is that situation going to be like? And honestly, to me, it's just going to be great entertainment. And I cannot wait for it, to be quite honest, regardless of what said, Josh. I will say I've had this one circled for a few weeks now because I have been waiting to see what the hell can be said, what storylines are going to be created, all of these things that you know are going to be kind of enhanced. And like when we are sitting there on Sunday morning and you're watching ESPN Sunday NFL Countdown, what is Greeny saying about that matchup and whatever concoction of idea they have that is Allen versus Diggs, because that is what's on the slate next. That is what the Bills are going to be looking forward to next, being the Bills versus the Texans. This game is already in the past because it's over with. And the Bills should be moving on forward and everything will be okay, people. There is another week to come. This isn't the playoffs. We didn't just lose. We don't have to start looking at the draft right now. This isn't the drought Bills when we had to already be looking at the draft by now anyways. This is a team that is going to be competing week in, week out, because you have 17, because you have McDermott, who does have experience. They just all kind of laid an egg collectively. And unfortunately for that, it was against a very good Ravens team on the road in front of the national, you know, spectatorship. And the media stuff doesn't matter. You know, if you want to enjoy a little bit of national media, go with the McAfees of the world, where it's kind of a little bit more of a comedic joke more than anything else. Enjoy those not an overreaction, but segments when you're going to definitely see them highlight a Bills tweet that talks about the season being over, even though they just lost their first game of the season. That will come. It'll be a good laugh and you move on.
Or just do what I do after games like this and dive into professional wrestling podcasts. Or, you know, Luca will listen to a lot of hockey talk this week. I mean, there's plenty of Spit and Chicklets got to be getting back in the swing of things. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I hope to be getting back in the swing of things too. Hint, hint, wink, wink. But
Sabres chat.
Sabres chat could be coming on the horizon. But overall, I will say wrestling, fun fact, the McMahon documentary. If you haven't watched it, if anyone needs something to get out of the football space, highly recommend the Mr. McMahon documentary on Netflix. It is a fantastic 6-part watch.
I watched episode one. I'm excited for episode two. Or is it all? Are they all out there already, or just episode one?
No, they're all out there. They're all.
Oh,
out
are they really? I thought it was episode one. Okay,
When they get to Attitude Era, oh my god, just right down memory lane.
I heard rumors of McMahon pitching a story where he got his daughter pregnant.
That does come up at some point.
Wild. We are off the rails. McDermott commented on the trick play, said that's something he and Joe Brady are going to talk about. One minor nitpick of McDermott, carry over from last week. When Keon Coleman was benched for the first quarter and McDermott was asked about it at his post-game press conference, I didn't need McDermott to be honest there and say that he was benched because he showed up late to something.
I need
McDermott just to be like, hey, that was what we felt was best for the team at that moment, and we can all just assume that was like strategy or game script. I didn't need him to kind of throw Keon Coleman under the bus, and it wasn't a big deal. McDermott kind of walked it back at his next press conference, but I don't need that out of you. I don't keep that in house anyway. Luca, this is gonna be a fun week. We've been waiting for it since the schedule came out. I'm stunned it wasn't a standalone game, but the Bills are back at 1 p.m next week. Enjoy it, because after that they go to Monday Night Football against the Jets. But this three-game stretch of really, really, really good opponents starts off in a negative way, but the Bills have a chance to right the ship next week against the Houston Texans and Stephon Diggs. And we'll be here covering it all for you. Stokes and I'll give you our predictions going into the weekend. Luca will give you his Luca's locks of predictions, not only for that game, if that game's involved, but the rest of the league, which has been super unpredictable. And Luke and I'll be back on Bills Texans post game, and I'll be here for Bills Texans halftime show. Hopefully it's a little bit more fun than this week. But for Luca, I am Josh McCarty. We will talk to you next week on Bills Texans.